Chapter 94. Sunday morning, Lisbeth's touch of rheumatism could not be made to appear serious enough to detain Dinah another night from the Hall Farm. Now she had made up her mind to leave her aunt so soon, and at evening the friends must part. For a long while, Dinah had said, for she had told Lisbeth of her resolve. Then it'll be for all my life, and I shall never see thee again, said Lisbeth. On while. In God no long while thee live. And I shall be took bad and die, and thee canst never come a nigh me, and I shall die a longing for thee. That had been the keynote of her wailing talk all day, for Adam was not in the house, and so she put no restraint on her complaining. As he had tried poor Dinah, by returning again and again to the question, why she must go away, and refusing to accept reasons, which seemed to her nothing but whim and contrariness, and still more, by regretting that she old Nahawa know the lads, and be her daughter. The colt's no put up why Seth, she said. He is no cliver enough for thee, happen, but he dobbin very good tee, he's as handy as can be at doing things for me when I'm bad, and he's as fond o' the Bible and chaplain as the art thyssen. But happen, feet's like a husband better as isna just the cut o' thyssen. The runnin' brook isna a thirst for th rain. Adam ud ha done for thee, I know he would, and he might come tee likely well enough, if feet's stop. But he's as stubborn as th iron bar, there's no bending him no way but own. But he'd be a fine husband for anybody, be they who they will, so looked on and so cliver as he is. And he'd be rare and lovin'. It does me good on ye look o' the lad's eye, when he means kind toward me. Dinah tried to escape from Lisbeth's closest looks and questions by finding little tasks of housework that kept her moving about, and as soon as Seth came home in the evening she put on her bonnet to go. It touched Dinah keenly to say the last goodbye, and still more to look round on her way across the fields, and see the old woman still standing at the door, gazing after her till she must have been the faintest speck in the dim aged eyes. He God of love and peace be with them, Dinah prayed, as she looked back from the last stile. Make them glad according to the days wherein thou hast afflicted them, and the years wherein they have seen evil. It is thy will, that I should part from them. Let me have no will but thine. Lisbeth turned into the house at last, and sat down in the workshop near Seth, who was busying himself there with fitting some bits of turned wood he had brought from the village into a small workbox, which he meant to give to Dinah before she went away. "Thee see her again o' Sunday afore she goes," were her first words. If thee wast good for anything, thee'dst make her come in again o' Sunday night why thee, and see me once more. "Nay, mother," said Seth. "Inna ud be sure to come again, if she saw right to come. I should have no need to persuade her. She only thinks it ud be troubling thee for naught, just to come in, to say goodbye over again. She'd never go away, I know, if Adam ud be fond on her and marry her, but everything's so contrary," said Lisbeth, with a burst of vexation. Seth paused a moment and looked up, with a slight blush, at his mother's face. "Hat! Has she said anything o' that sort to thee, mother?" he said, in a lower tone. "Said? Nay, she'll say nothing. It's on the men as have to wait till folks say things afore they find them out." "Well, but what makes thee think so, mother? What's put it into thy head?" "It's no matter what's put it into my head. My head's none so hollow as it must get in, and not to put it there. I know she's fond on him, as I know th wind's coming in at the door, and that's enough. And he might be willing to marry her, if he know that she's fond on him, but he'll never think on't, if somebody deesna put it into his head." His mother's suggestion about Dinah's feeling towards Adam was not quite a new thought to Seth, but her last words alarmed him, lest she should herself undertake to open Adam's eyes. He was not sure about Dinah's feeling, and he thought he was sure about Adam's. "Nay, mother, nay," he said, earnestly, "thee mustna think o' speaking o' such things to Adam. Thee's no right to say what Dinah's feelings are if as he hasna told thee, and it ud do nothing but mischief to say such things to Adam. He feels very grateful and affectionate toward Dinah, but he's no thoughts towards her that would incline him to make her his wife. And I don't believe Dinah would marry him either. I don't think she'll marry at all. Eh, said Lisbeth, impatiently. He thinks so cause she won't naughty. She'll never marry he might as well like her t-hot-eye brother. Seth was hurt. Other, he said, in a remonstrating tone, don't think that of me. I should be as thankful to have her for a sister as he would to have her for a daughter. I've no more thoughts about myself in that thing, and I shall take it hard, if ever he says it again. Well, then he shouldn't across me why saying things arena as I say they are. But, mother, said Seth, thee'dst be doing Dinah a wrong by telling Adam what he thinks about her. It would do nothing but mischief, for it would make Adam uneasy if he didn't feel the same to her. And I'm pretty sure he feels nothing o' the sort. Eh, Donna, tell me what thee't sure on. He knows not about it. What's he lays going to the poisters for, if he didn't want to see her? He goes twice where he used to go once. Happen he knows na as he wants to see her. He knows na as I put salt in's broth, but he'd miss it pretty quick if it weren't there. He'll never think o' marrying if it isn't put into his head, and if thee'dst any love for thy mother, thee'dst put him up tot and not let her go away out o' my sight, when I might offer to make a bit o' comfort for me afore I go to bed to my old man under the white thorn. Nay, mother, said Seth, he mustna think me unkind, but I should be going against my conscience if I took upon me to say what Dinah's feelings are. And besides that, I think I should give offense to Adam by speaking to him at all about marrying, and I counsel he not to dot. He mayst be quite deceived about Dinah. Nay, I'm pretty sure, by words she said to me last Sabbath, as she's no mind to marry. Eh, feet as contrary as the rest on them. If it were some that I didn't want, it would be done fast enough. Lisbeth rose from the bench at this, and went out of the workshop, leaving Seth in much anxiety lest she should disturb Adam's mind about Dinah. He consoled himself after a time with reflecting that, since Adam's trouble, Lisbeth had been very timid about speaking to him on matters of feeling, and that she would hardly dare to approach this tenderest of all subjects. Even if she did, he hoped Adam would not take much notice of what she said. Seth was right in believing that Lisbeth would be held in restraint by timidity, and during the next 3 days, the intervals in which he had an opportunity of speaking to Adam were too rare and short to cause her any strong temptation. But in her long solitary hours she brooded over her regretful thoughts about Dinah, till they had grown very near that point of unmanageable strength, when thoughts are apt to take wing out of their secret nest in a startling manner. And on Sunday morning, when Seth went away to chapel at Treddleston, the dangerous opportunity came. Sunday morning was the happiest time in all the week to Lisbeth. For as there was no service at Hayslip Church till the afternoon, Adam was always at home, doing nothing but reading, an occupation in which she could venture to interrupt him. Moreover, as he had always a better dinner than usual to prepare for her sons very frequently for Adam and herself alone, Seth being often away the entire day, and the smell of the roast meat before the clear fire in the clean kitchen, the clock ticking in a peaceful Sunday manner, her darling Adam seated near her in his best clothes, doing nothing very important, so that she could go and stroke her hand across his hair if she liked, and see him look up at her and smile, while Jip, rather jealous, poked his muzzle up between them. All these things made poor Lisbeth's earthly paradise. The book Adam most often read on a Sunday morning was his large pictured Bible, and this morning it lay open before him on the round white deal table in the kitchen. For he sat there in spite of the fire, because he knew his mother liked to have him with her, and it was the only day in the week when he could indulge her in that way. He would have liked to see Adam reading his Bible. He never opened it on a weekday, and so he came to it as a holiday book, serving him for history, biography, and poetry. He held one hand thrust between his waistcoat buttons, and the other ready to turn the pages, and in the course of the morning you would have seen many changes in his face. Sometimes his lips moved in semi-articulation. It was when he came to a speech that he could fancy himself uttering, such as Samuel's dying speech to the people. Then his eyebrows would be raised, and the corners of his mouth would quiver a little with sad sympathy. Something, perhaps old Isaac's meeting with his son, touched him closely. At other times, over the New Testament, a very solemn look would come upon his face, and he would every now and then shake his head in serious assent, or just lift up his hand and let it fall again. And on some mornings, when he read in the Apocrypha, of which he was very fond, the son of Sirach's keen-edged words would bring a delighted smile, though he also enjoyed the freedom of occasionally differing from an apocryphal writer. For Adam knew the articles quite well, as became a good churchman. Lisbeth, in the pauses of attending to her dinner, always sat opposite to him and watched him, till she could rest no longer without going up to him, and giving him a caress, to call his attention to her. This morning he was reading the Gospel according to St. Matthew, and Lisbeth had been standing close by him for some minutes, stroking his hair, which was smoother than usual this morning, and looking down at the large page with silent wonderment at the mystery of letters. She was encouraged to continue this caress, because when she first went up to him, he had thrown himself back in his chair, to look at her affectionately and say, "Why, mother, he looks rare and hearty this morning. Eh, Jip wants me to look at him. He can't abide to think I love thee the best." Lisbeth said nothing, because she wanted to say so many things. And now there was a new leaf to be turned over, and it was a picture, that of the angel seated on the great stone that has been rolled away from the sepulchre. This picture had one strong association in Lisbeth's memory, for as he had been reminded of it when she first saw Dinah, and Adam had no sooner turned the page and lifted the book sideways that they might look at the angel, than she said, "That's her, that's Dinah." Adam smiled, and, looking more intently at the angel's face, said, "It is a bit like her, but Dinah's prettier, I think." "Well, then, if he thinks her so pretty, why aren't fond on her?" Adam looked up in surprise. "Hi, mother, dost think I don't set store by Dinah?" "Nay," said Lisbeth, frightened at her own courage, yet feeling that as he had broken the ice, and the waters must flow, whatever mischief they might do. "Hadst thou set in store by things as are 30 mile off? If thee wast fond enough on her, thee wouldst na let her go away." "But I've no right to hinder her, if she thinks well," said Adam, looking at his book, as if he wanted to go on reading. He foresaw a series of complaints tending to nothing. Lisbeth sat down again in the chair opposite to him, as she said. "But she wouldna think well, if he wasna so contrary." Lisbeth dared not venture beyond a vague phrase yet. "Contrary, mother?" Adam said, looking up again in some anxiety. "What have I done? What dost mean?" "Why, thee never look at nothing, nor think o' nothing, but thy figuring, and thy work," said Lisbeth, half crying. "And dost think thee canst go on, so all thy life, as if thee wast a man cut out o' timber? And what do when thy mother's gone, and nobody to take care on thee as thee jetst a bit o' vittle comfortable i' the morning? What hast got i' thy mind, mother?" said Adam, vexed at this whimpering. "Canna see what thee driving at. Is there anything I could do for thee as I don't do?" "Aye, and that there is. Thee might do as I should ha' somebody why me to comfort me a bit, and wait on me when I'm bad, and be good to me." "Well, mother, whose fault is it there isna some tidy body ith house to help thee? It isna by my wish as thee hast a stroke o' work to do. We can afford it, I've told thee often enough. It 'ud be a deal better for us." "Eh, what's the use o' talking o' tidy bodies, when he means one o'th wenches out o'th village, or somebody from Treadlisten as I never set eyes on i' my life? I'd sooner make a shift, and get into my own coffin afore I die, nor ha' them folks to put me in." Adam was silent, and tried to go on reading. That was the utmost severity he could show towards his mother on a Sunday morning. But Lisbeth had gone too far now to check herself, and after scarcely a minute's quietness she began again. "Thee mightst know well enough who 'tis I'd like tea ha why me. It is the many folks I send for tea come and see me, I reckon, and feast at the fetchin' on her time zeno. Thee means Dinah, mother, I know," said Adam. "But it's no use setting thy mind on what can't be. If Dinah 'ud be willing to stay at Hayslope, it isn't likely she can come away from her aunt's house, where they hold her like a daughter, and where she's more bound than she is to us. If it had been so that she could ha' married Seth, that 'ud ha' been a great blessing to us, but we can't have things just as we like in this life. Thee must try, and make up thy mind to do without her. Nay, but I can't ma' up my mind, when she's just cut out for thee, and not shall mommy believe as God did the make her, and send her there o' purpose for thee. What's it signify about her being a Methody? It 'ud happen wear out on her why marryin'." Adam threw himself back in his chair and looked at his mother. He understood now what S he had been aiming at from the beginning of the conversation. It was as unreasonable, impracticable a wish as S he had ever urged, but he could not help being moved by so entirely new an idea. The chief point, however, was to chase away the notion from his mother's mind as quickly as possible. "Mother," he said, gravely, "thee talking wild. Don't let me hear thee say such things again. It's no good talking o' what can never be. Dinah's not for marrying. She's fixed her heart on a different sort o' life." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.